Welcome to NHL at the Rink. It's our weekly podcast covering all 31 teams. I'm Dan Rosen, your host and NHL.com senior writer. Once again, to my right is Sean Rourke. Even though, Sean, you said last week you wouldn't be here, I believe you have your itinerary correct now.
Surprise. I'm here. The sled dogs got me back in time. There was some pretty wild weather in Regina, but all worth it. Fantastic game.
So you were there in Regina, and I love the outdoor games. I've done a lot. I didn't get to do this one. You did. You were the lucky one. Give us the scene. Set the picture for what it was. What was your experience at the Heritage Classic?
It was amazing. And you know, we've been doing these for years now, and on the big pictures, there tends to be fatigue at times. People say, oh, why are you doing this
again?
I know. And then you go into market, and it's like the carnival has come to town. Yeah. The state fair has come to town. And that's what this was. These people love hockey so much, and they're so starved for the NHL game and so proud of their heritage. One of the things that we did was on Friday, there was a big luncheon, kind of welcome the NHL, and there was a presentation about the hockey history of Saskatchewan. And it's just amazing. It's 3% of the Canadian population. It's 10% of the NHL players have come from Saskatchewan. So, you know, they have a proud history, and they were excited to show off their town and their province. And the Mosaic Stadium, oh my God, it's a fantastic place. And then, you know what, you could tell the hockey gods are happy with these outdoor games, because you could not have picked a better atmosphere for that game. It was right around freezing. Snow came out of nowhere. It wasn't in the forecast, and was just enough not to build up, but to make this beautiful picture. The wind that was howling at 30, 40 kilometers per hour died down for the game. Players said it was the best ice any of them had skated on outdoors. So just a fantastic night all around.
It just looks so good on TV. I was watching from home. It just looks so good, as most of these games do. But you brought it up. I hate that narrative of, you know, they're tired. No, you go into market in these games. And by the way, there's three of them this year. That means there's 1,268 indoor games. There's three outdoor games. And in each one of those markets, it's a huge deal. And I think if you just go to one, you anybody who has a small-minded approach at it, if you go to one, you will not have that anymore.
No, and it's all the things that go on around it, right? The other events, they had a junior game the next day. They were very excited about the pregame ceremonies, the entertainment. So it's fantastic. But we have a lot of what's going on this week to talk about, and we should jump right into it.
Yeah, well, the day after the Heritage Classic, I was at Madison Square Garden covering the New York Rangers against the Boston Bruins, and I saw the Boston Bruins top line have 13 points in a game. Brad Marchand had five assists for David Pastrnak, a hat trick for Patrice Bergeron. They are the best line going in the NHL. They have 54 points in 11 games this season as we record this podcast. And the Bruins are rolling, and they don't even need secondary scoring yet. And I think they're going to continue to roll, because I don't know how you stop this top line right now. To me, everybody talks about it's usually the center who drives the line, right? In most cases, it's the center. Crosby, the McKinnons, McDavids, they drive the line. To me, it's David Pastrnak that's driving this line right now. Because of his speed, he opens everything up. They don't miss a beat, these three guys together.
No, and people have had an opportunity to stop them because they haven't gotten any secondary scoring.
Absolutely.
So especially when you're the home team, you can load up and say, I'm going to put everything against this line and stop them. Look, since the start of last year, David Pastrnak, because of injuries, has played in 79 games. He scored 104 points.
He's so good. And everybody looks at him and says, wow, he's a great goal scorer, and he is such a good playmaker. He had five assists the other night, right?
Yeah.
And somebody actually asked the question, like, you know, oh, he didn't score a goal, because he had goals in five straight games. You know, what did you say? He had five assists. He's making plays all over the ice. And that's why I think he's the one. If you have to stop that line, you have to stop David Pastrnak, because he drives everything on that line, and he does it from the wing, which is so different from what we see.
I don't know, because then you got Marchand. Let me give you another quick stat. Since January 1st of 2019, Connor McDavid has 79 points, right? 79 points.
Yeah.
Guess who else has 79 points in that same span? Marchand. You're talking about the greatest goal scorer supposedly of our generation, and now you're talking about Brad Marchand, who everybody wants to dismiss because of his personality, because of the way he plays on the ice, because he's a little bit of an agitator. He is a world-class point getter. World-class.
And then you have Bergeron, who is just
the best 200-foot player in the league.
Probably. He's just so good. So we talk about that line. right before we started recording this podcast, you get the news on Gabriel Landeskog. He's going to be out indefinitely for the Colorado Avalanche. Mikko Rantanen's also out. You want to talk about other lines that are terrific that you can compare to the Bruins' top line. Certainly that one in Colorado with Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, and Mikko Rantanen. And now two of the three are out. I don't know how the Avalanche in the short term survived this, because they even though they got Nazem Kadri and they are better and they have production from defense and they are deeper, I just don't know how they can withstand the loss of both of these players.
In a way, you know, you hope that neither injury is very long term, right. But I think they'll be okay for a little while because of all the things you mentioned. They are deeper. This gives them an opportunity, you know, to kind of mix and match and see who works with who. I think sometimes Bednar, the coach there, he's handcuffed by that safety blanket of putting those guys together. You know, much like McDavid and Dreisaitl and Edmonton and so on and so forth, you have this tendency to load up on your top line because it's secure. You know what you're going to get out of it. But come playoffs and come late in the season when you got to kind of switch things around because of matchups, this is going to give them a bigger sample size of being able to see, hey, who works with who and who does what, and let other people come out of the woodwork, so to speak. So, look, if it's long-term, they're going to have some issues, especially in the West where everything's going to be so close and so competitive. But for the short-term, it's an opportunity to kind of see some different things, and I'm interested to see how they weather it.
I just don't like that term, out indefinitely. That's the one that scares me.
Yeah.
I mean, Evgeny Malkin was out indefinitely,
yeah,
and now he can play
Saturday, yeah.
Right? And so you don't know. And speaking of that, I mean, how huge is that for the Pittsburgh Penguins to Galchenyuk and Brian Rust and Nick Bjugstad are going to be back, and now you're going to get Malkin back, and it seems like I sit here and I question if the Avalanche can survive it in a long term way or a short term way, but the Pittsburgh Penguins clearly have survived without all their guys who were hurt, and they're going to be just fine, I think.
Yeah, and they have Crosby and Letang, and we've mentioned that a number of times. And I think there's the same thing with Colorado, right? They still have a pretty elite forward. They have a couple of pretty good defensemen, and their goaltending is serviceable, if not better. So, you know, I think in the short term they can clearly do that. You know, you get into February, March, April, where things are going to get a lot more difficult and you still don't have those two guys, then it's a much more of a difficult job.
Well, speaking of what we know right now, we know that Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon are tight, right, from the same hometown, Cole Harbour. This is MacKinnon's chance to be Crosby, basically, because how many times has Crosby had to put the Penguins on his back because of injuries? Now it's MacKinnon's turn.
Yeah, and I think he's ready for it. I think every year he's taken another step, so now we're at the point where he gets to say, much like Crosby did several years ago, I can take a team on my back, yeah, and I can make them good.
Away from the injury news here for a second, Sean, there's another thing that happened right before we started recording this podcast. Alex Ovechkin in Toronto had a message, I would say, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, saying, and I quote, "They are still a young group of guys, and I hope they're going to learn, but it's up to them how they want to do it. And if they want to play for yourself or if they want to win a cup, they have to play differently. It's no doubt." What do you think of that?
Well, I think part of it was in response to Austin Matthews earlier this week saying he hates losing. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs haven't been as good as they want to be. John Tavares has been out. But look, you win a cup and you learn a few things, right? The other part of that quote that happened either earlier or later is he said that maybe Austin Matthews should call Dale Hunter.
Yeah.
And if anybody remembers when Alex Ovechkin played for Dale Hunter, he did not think he was all that good a coach, but he did teach Alex Ovechkin to play a little bit of defense. And then Barry Trotz finished the job, and they became world champions. So once you win the Stanley Cup, you could start dispensing advice like that. But Alex Ovechkin was in Austin Matthews' shoes at that same point, yeah, in his career, and he wasn't all that interested in people, because there was a generation of players who told him the same thing. If he doesn't want to be just a great goal scorer and he wants to be a champion, he better learn how to play in his own end. And he didn't accept that for a long time, but then he won, and now he's seen the error of his ways, and now he's going to advocate that other young players play defense.
And he's right.
He is right.
He's 100% right.
But it takes a while to learn it. When you're the top offensive player in the game, there's other people that do that job for you.
I was at the morning skate today, Tuesday, talking with Brian Engblom at Madison Square Garden. Tampa Bay Lightning are in town. I was talking to Brian Engblom, who was our guest last week, and we were talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and how those guys there, big personalities, right? A lot of attitude in a good way, a lot of swagger, but they have to find a way to make it work within how you win in the NHL today. And I think that is going to be, and still is, the biggest struggle when you put a collection of talent together. A lot of individual guys who are individually talented, put them together. It's not the easiest transition to make, and they have to figure that out. Alex Ovechkin struggled to do it for a long time.
Who's one of the best defensive coaches in the league? It's the guy that stands behind the Toronto bench, Mike Babcock, yeah. who since he's got there has tried to get this team to play a defensive game, because that's what's going to win in the playoffs. That's what's going to beat the Boston Bruins in their top line in the playoffs. You have to commit to it, and it's not always pretty, and it's not always easy, but you have to do it if you want to win. There's no team that's won the Stanley Cup in the last, since probably Austin Matthews has been alive, that didn't play defense.
And the St. Louis Blues did it, obviously, very well last year, but tough injury for them. We're going to get into this with our first guest, Darren Pang from Fox Sports Midwest, who covers the Blues. But Vladimir Tarasenko, left shoulder, out at least 5 months, reevaluated in 5 months. Initial reaction to this, Sean?
A huge hole for them. I think if you look back, he had 20 points, right? And early in the year, was struggling. Consequently, the St. Louis Blues were struggling. They were in last place going into January. He had 48 points in the last 34 games or something crazy like that, and then was very good in the playoffs, even though he played injured for part of that Stanley Cup final. So they're not a team that's going to generate a lot of offense from a lot of different places. So that is a huge, huge hole to fill.
It is. Right before we get to Darren, I will say, though, I think if a team is built to withstand it, it's that team because of how well they do play as a team. But let's get right to Darren. Like I said, Fox Sports Midwest Blues analyst. Darren, thanks for joining. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Dan, and it's great to get this NHL season really going now. I mean, I think the weather's changing, and I think that makes you feel a little bit more about hockey, which is great.
And you know the season is underway when you get injury news, obviously. Guys are playing, so they get hurt sometimes. Vladimir Tarasenko out 5 months. Will he be reevaluated in 5 months with a left shoulder injury? Darren, initial reaction, what do the Blues do now? This guy is so important for them. How do they manage this situation without their leading goal scorer?
Well, the one thing I think people have to remember is that, last year when the Blues turned it around in January, one of the big reasons why they turned it around was because they started playing for one another. They became the ultimate team. And I noticed a change in Vladdy's game as well. It wasn't just about scoring goals for Vladdy. It was about following the system and being hard on the forecheck and doing all the little things that everybody else was doing. All that being said, he's still an elite goal scorer. And in those tough mucking and grinding games where you need that one shot, that one quick release, he's a difference maker. So automatically I thought, where are they going to find the goals from? I never thought that... I think, guys will come in and step in, especially in the short term, and make up for his loss. But you don't replace a player like that in the long term if you're expecting the kind of play that he gives. So automatically, it's a bit of a shock to the system. But again, going back to it, the Blues play an ultimate team game, and I know that there's going to be some opportunity for some other guys.
And who are those guys? I mean, as you look at their lineup, there's several candidates that could step into that. Who do you think, especially for the fantasy players out there, they're going to want to know right away who's going to take that top spot?
As of today's practice, Sandy Blais is going to move up there. And similar to Vladdy, not obviously in what he's done in the NHL, but he's a left-hand shot that's comfortable on the right side. And so that means there's no real change for Braden Schenn. So it was the same line, Schwartz, Schenn, and Sammy Blais. The last game in Detroit, Robert Thomas stepped in there on that side, the same with the game in Boston the previous night. So he would be one player that would be given that golden opportunity. Another player that has performed there but is not quite the goal scorer, but he's a big, strong body, was Oscar Sundquist. So as we see right now, those would be the players that would jump up to that spot.
And you mentioned Robert Thomas, and he's the first guy that I thought of, Darren, of guys who are wanting and waiting and for an opportunity and need to play to earn that opportunity. He was the first guy I thought of. Could this be his breakout moment because of the injury opportunity?
Well, it could be. After watching him for two games on that right side, the one area for me that would be a bit of a concern is if you're looking for the goal scoring, Robert Thomas, he doesn't take it to the net like a guy like Vladdy takes it to the net. Same with Sammy Blais, who's I think he's got a better tendency as a winger, a natural winger, to drop a shoulder and go to the net. I mean, Robert Thomas is a natural centerman that can make plays, but he's not a natural shooter off the wing. If he gets that mentality, and if there's one coach that can get that through to him, that would be obviously Craig Berube, then yes, that could change, and Robert Thomas could be dynamic on that side because of his skill level. He works so well with Tyler Bozak, you hate to break up that tandem. And so that's why I think it would balance it out better with Sammy Blais, who's a natural winger and a natural shooter of the puck.
Darren, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, the Central Division hasn't been the meat grinder that everybody thought it would be, and now Colorado's got a couple of key players out in Rantanen, who's been out for a couple of weeks, and Landeskog just today was announced out indefinitely. Dallas has struggled out of the gate. When you look around at the competition that St. Louis has, you know, what kind of jumps out at you?
Well, obviously you mentioned Colorado, and that's a big blow for them. I was covering the game when Rantanen twisted up that left ankle, foot, knee, and then and losing, you know, Landeskog. So a line that was predominantly a one-line wrecking crew has got much more balance now. So I still think they'll be okay, but that's going to take a lot of the fire out of Colorado. The Nashville Predators, for me, are a team that we forgot about a little bit heading into the season, and I think they're excellent. I mean, they've got their captain locked in now to a new deal. I think if he's not the best defenseman in the NHL, he's awfully close. I have a high regard for Roman Josi. I think they're so balanced up the middle of the ice. I think that's where the Blues were so strong last year, at the center ice position. So I would say, for me, St. Louis and Nashville, Colorado, those are your three top teams for me in the Central Division.
You know, and Darren, you mentioned Roman Josi. He was a guy that I was going to get to with you. I was going to ask you where you rank him. How high do you rank him, obviously, among defensemen in the league? Obviously, you rank him high. What is it about Roman Josi's game that enables him to be as because I think he's one of the most consistent defensemen night in, night out in the NHL, consistently excellent. What is it about his game that allows him to be that consistently excellent defenseman, do you think?
You know what, Dan? I think he does everything. I think he does everything well. I think he makes a great first pass out of his own zone. He's terrific on the power play. His reads in the neutral zone defending are exceptional. The one thing as a former goaltender that I always looked at was gap closure, because as a goalie, all you're looking at is the rear end of your players for the most part, and you want them to be up the ice to have the ability to close the gap when another team comes back towards you. And I think he's one of the very best in the league. Great stick, breaking up plays, sticks and lanes, everything about him. I mean, ever since he came into the league, I've had him as a top defenseman in the National Hockey League, and I don't change my mind there. We can argue about, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, however you want to put it, but I'm going to throw him in my top three automatically.
You know, and you just said about who those teams are that you worry about in the Central, and Dallas wasn't on that list. It was on a lot of people's list coming in. They've struggled early on. Some of their additions haven't really helped out. Some of their really good players, and on the back end, a guy like Klingberg and Heiskanen have not been as dominant as they were last year. What do you see when you look at Dallas? It seems like they're waiting for something.
I'm surprised. I had them as a top contender, actually, and especially seeing how they played. That series against St. Louis last year was an excellent series, and it could have gone either way, as we all know. I mean, it could have been the Dallas Stars lifting the Stanley Cup. So I thought that they were going to take a huge step forward, especially with, you know, a guy like Joe Pavelski in that, you know, in that lineup with what he brings to the table. So I'm, you know, I think I'm like everybody else. I'm wondering, when are they going to get this together? Are they like the St. Louis Blues last year that added some new faces, and it took a little longer for them to maybe check their egos at the door, is a phrase I used a lot last year with the Blues. And until you do that and play like a team, you don't have the success. Are the core players doing the little necessary things the right way to lead by example? I don't know. But something is certainly wrong with the way that they're playing, and especially the way they're defending. I think they're leaving their goalies hanging out to dry, and that's obviously that's not the way you draw it up for a really good team. So, yeah, that's a confusing issue for me, what's happening in Dallas. I think they can turn it around. I think there's lots of time, and I think St. Louis proved to everybody that the season's not done in Thanksgiving anymore, which is great news for everybody because it keeps your hopes alive.
That is awesome for hockey fans. I'm curious, in looking at what Joe's doing in Dallas, it kind of reminds me a little of when Ryan O'Reilly came to the Blues. Like, does it take a long time for a player, especially who's been in one system with one team like Joe has for so long, to be able to exert influence, to be able to get to his game and not think about how he's impacting other people and what other people are thinking of him?
I had a lot of conversations with Ryan O'Reilly, Tyler Bozak, Pat Maroon. These were new players that came into St. Louis last year. And the one common denominator is they didn't want to go into an established locker room, which St. Louis had, and step on anybody's toes. So maybe they weren't as verbal, as vocal as they could have been inside that locker room because they didn't want to step on, for Joe Pavelski, maybe it's a case of not wanting to step on Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn's toes a little bit. And it takes a little bit of time. January 1st, I asked Craig Berube, what has been the difference in this team leadership-wise? And he said, I've got Ryan O'Reilly speaking. I've got Pat Maroon opening up. I've got guys that are saying, okay, we've got to do better. We've got to speak up. We've got to be more on the leadership side of it. And so it happened in January. That's when things started for the St. Louis Blues, and it doesn't mean that can't happen for the Dallas Stars.
Darren, I wanted to bounce to another team in the Central Division, one coming into St. Louis tomorrow, Wednesday, I should say, the Minnesota Wild. If you're step into Bill Guerin's shoes, what do you do? What's your approach if you're the new general manager of the Minnesota Wild who took over on August 21st? Are you patient, or do you think you need to be reactive?
I think it's difficult to be reactive in this league. So many contracts are just in place. So many contracts are just immovable. Those are just the facts.
Yeah.
So those roster spots, you know, don't just disappear on a two-way contract. So sometimes this is what we have. Evaluating the young players, allowing some of the players that are draft picks in the minors to develop, much like what Steve Yzerman's doing. You know, he's not recalling his first-round draft picks to put him in a negative position in the NHL. He's sitting them in the American Hockey League. And I think for Billy Guerin, I think that's the evaluation process that he has right here. He has the luxury. He's not going anywhere. You can't go through three GMs in 3 years if you're the owner. You need stability. So for right now, and unfortunately, I think it's one of these areas where you've got to let this locker room play things out. Maybe they've got to butt heads, and I'll go back to St. Louis last year. Do you recall the fight that, you know, they were hitting rock bottom? I was at the Mills, their old practice rink, and boy, toe-to-toe went, you know, Zach Sanford and Robert Bortuzzo. They'd hit the bottom. And maybe the Minnesota Wild, go back to my age, Minnesota Wild due to maybe they need to hit rock bottom and maybe find something else inside that locker room before he can take a step forward.
You talk about rock bottom. Well, let's bounce to the Pacific for one final one for you, Darren. The San Jose Sharks, they're not rock bottom by any means. But, you know, I think, okay, Roman Josi signs the big contract today, and you know consistently what you're going to get night in and night out from Roman Josi. Erik Karlsson signs a huge contract, and he's been remarkably inconsistent, and the Sharks have just looked like a mess. What do you do if you're Doug Wilson? What do you do if you're Pete DeBoer? Or maybe we should be asking, if you're Doug Wilson, do you look at Pete DeBoer and say, you know what, maybe a change is needed there?
That's also a tough one because you've added such personalities the last couple of years. I've always heard, it's been for years, that chemistry in that locker room that Doug Wilson's put together is all about character, and they've battled hard for one another. And one of the reasons you bring back Patty Marleau is maybe to not straighten things out, but make sure you've got another calming influence inside that room. And you added a personality in Evander Kane basically 2 years ago. You've added another personality in Karlsson. You've taken away a little bit of the matchup game. The one thing I knew going as a broadcaster preparing for a game that the San Jose Sharks were in, they always had a hard matchup. So you're always going in. It was a Vlasic and it was a Braun. It was offensively, you always had the right-handed Burns and then whoever they put with them. And now that's been changed up. And they haven't had that same similarities on the defending side of it. Karlsson, a right-hand shot. Burns, a right-hand shot. The lack of the matchup game defensively. So this is a tough one. It's either it's a team that's built to make plays, And it's a team that's made and built to get out of their zone with one quick pass and up the ice. But until Erik Karlsson gets back to maybe the health or the form that he showed a couple of years ago with Ottawa, I think it's going to be a struggle. I think it's that's why the patient game, which nobody wants, is going to have to be there for San Jose until, I think, until Karlsson gets that body the way it was a couple of years ago, if he can do that.
Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting to watch. All these teams we talk about, you know, so interesting to watch, see where they go from here. Darren, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It is my pleasure to join you guys. Have a great season.
You too, buddy.
Definitely some interesting stuff from Panger there on the Sharks in particular, and that's where I wanted to go, Sean, because they look like a team in disarray right now. He's right about that. I think there is a fix there. I think there can be, but I really question it because Karlsson doesn't look right. Mark Edward Vlasic doesn't look right. The guys that they absolutely needed to step up this year, they're young players. Kevin LeBanc and Timo Meier have not done so far. There's a fix there because there's a lot of talent there, but a lot of individual talent, and they are not cohesive at all. And worse yet, their goaltending has just not been good.
No, their goaltending has been below league average. Neither guy has over a 9 save percentage right now and didn't last year. I think you look at this team, and as a general manager, you wonder what it is, right? Because they caught fire last year. We were having these same conversations about them last year, and all of a sudden they're in the Western Conference Final, and they're a couple of games away from, you know, playing for the Stanley Cup for the second time in 3 years with pretty much the same core. And I think Wilson, you know, kind of said, hey, we got to change this a little bit. And some guys went out the door, and Marlowe wasn't going to come back, and then things didn't work out so well. They had to bring him back. But to me, with the league going for speed for the most part, they're not a fast team.
No.
They're an older team that doesn't move as fast as some other teams. They can transition well, but they don't move as fast. And I thought the most interesting thing Darren said was their defense and how you knew when you went in and you played them that there would be some hard matches. Their defense is in disarray, and I think it's because guys are playing with different guys. If you look right now, statistically, their best defenseman when you look at scoring chances is Brendan Dillon, right? He's one of the only guys that's plus on that whole team when it comes to shot attempts. Mark Edward Vlasic,
what
is an elite defenseman, defensive defenseman in this league. Is it because there's no more Ryan Braun? Is it because, I don't know, is he playing Justin Braun?
Yeah.
If it was Ryan Braun, he'd really be in trouble, right? what happened? And I think those are the things that Pete DeBoer has to figure out.
And he's been there a long time, Pete DeBoer. He's had a lot of success making the playoffs there. And you know how it goes in this league sometimes, Sean. Sometimes the coach's message just gets lost. And I don't know if that's the case with the Sharks, because I think there's a lot of pride, number one, in that room. And I think they like him. They've played hard for him. But I think it's fair to ask if Pete DeBoer can clean it up.
Well, I think the players are going to clean it up. And I think part of the problem is that the players right now are like, we can clean it up.
Yeah.
We've cleaned it up before. We can do it again. And you never know when that bottom comes, right? When it's not fixable anymore. And everybody in that organization has to look at it and say, is it fixable? Can I wait? How long can I wait? When do I have to make a decision, whether it's player, whether it's goalie, whether it's coach, whatever it is? You know, how long can I trust this veteran group that's taking me so far? You know, and that's the line that needs to be walked.
Here's the good thing for the Sharks. Nobody's running away with the Pacific Division, okay. And they have six straight. They play Boston on Tuesday night. They have six straight games at home right after: Winnipeg, Vancouver, Chicago, Minnesota, Nashville, and Edmonton. Nashville's the toughest game of that bunch. If they can go home and win four out of those six, five if they need to, they'll be right back there. They'll be fine again.
Yeah. If they get some goaltending, they'll
be okay.
If
they get some goaltending in. Speaking of goaltending, let's go to our next guest, our second goalie on the podcast, Mike McKenna, now a studio analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights, former professional goalie, played in the National Hockey League for several hundred teams in the American Hockey League, it seems like, was bounced all around his career. Now he's in the studio for the Vegas Golden Knights. Mike, how's everything going?
It's going great. Yeah, it's a new adventure for me. Going into this season, I was hoping I'd be able to do broadcasting, and that turned out to be a dream come true with Vegas. So learning the ropes, I've got some great people helping me out, and Darren Millard, Dave Gosher, Shane Knighty, Gary Lawless, on down the list of those guys in Vegas. So it's been a good experience so far.
That's pretty much a murderer's row of broadcasters there. Not a bad place to have to learn in Summerlin and Vegas, right? Like, if you're going to do hockey, that's the place to do it.
It is right now, especially with the organization, how hot it is. It has turned into something I never really expected with Las Vegas, but they've adopted that team in ways that have been documented. It's a lot of fun. It's a young, hungry organization, and they took a chance on me, and I appreciate it, and it's been really good so far for both of us, I think.
So a lot of people might not know this, but you're back to your roots. This was the very first place you ever played pro hockey was Vegas, and I'm sure as you sat there at, what was it, the old Orleans Civic Center, that you probably thought, you know what, in 20 years I'll be back in Vegas and they'll have an NHL team and I'll be in the studio, right? That's exactly everything played out the way you wanted?
Yeah, that's what I wrote down in the notebook about, 15 years ago. It's exactly what I expected. It's funny because I look back on it and, I was just young coming out of college and trying to, quite frankly, just play hockey for some fun of it and see how long it would last. I never expected to have the career I did. And for what it turned into for myself is one thing, to come full circle like that. But to see what Las Vegas has done, that's a whole different ballpark. And yeah, but I still get goosebumps going by the Orleans with all the fond memories I have of it.
Do you watch games when you're working the games? Are you watching them through the goaltending eye that you have, or are you trying to take yourself out of the goalie mode just to analyze what's happening on the ice?
I think the goalie mode is forever ingrained into me. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever going to go away. So I'm trying to reprogram myself to watch the entire game, not just right. The goaltending aspect. That has been one of the challenges, to be honest with you. I'm used to seeing everything from the goal out, which I still do. So that's been a fun challenge. And I also think it's just made me more aware of the sport in general and the players across the board in the National Hockey League.
Well, one of the things, and we wanted to get to this with you, Mike, is we are seeing it now more than ever probably in the NHL, the goalie tandem, and how rare it is that you have a number one, if you want to call him that now in the league, but there's a lot of them playing on a back-to-back situation, playing both games. The goalie tandem has become so important. Why is that? Why in today's NHL do you think we're not seeing the 60-plus start goalie anymore? We're seeing more guys in tandem. Like the obviously the Tuukka Rask, Jaroslav Halak is a great example.
There's a couple things at play here. The biggest one to me, I think, is probably the movement with analytics to trying to figure out when to properly utilize your goaltenders. There was data showing that the second game of back-to-backs, for instance, you'd be better off playing a different goalie or the front side or whatever way it was. Boston found that and they got a good answer for it in Jaro Halak, and they've been fantastic. So that's kind of created the rubric for the rest of the league at this point. But part of it too, though, is that there's just a glut of really good goaltenders at this point. And it's not like the old days where you had one goalie and the other guy was just the backup who's there. He's going to sit on the bench. We'll stick our prospect in the American League. They're still there, but the curve has been greatly accelerated. So now you've got young goalies coming in at a younger age. You've got really capable goalies all throughout organizations. And that's been a driving factor of this, on top of what the analytics are saying to rest your so-called starter more often than in the past.
I'm curious, because you've obviously dealt with so many coaches, and picking goaltenders might be the ultimate coaching decision, and a lot of them admit to not knowing as much as they should know or doing it by feel or whatever. We talk about all these tandems and how the Bruins have kind of set the template, but then you look at their opponent in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it was Jordan Binnington, and they rode him nonstop from January. I think he only didn't play in three games from January 1st, and part of that was out of necessity. They needed so much ground to make up, but clearly he showed that you can do it over a long period of time. And then the guy that you get to watch every day this year, Marc-Andre Fleury, I think he's played, 12 out of 14 games or something like that. Clearly, Gerard Gallant's comfortable with him. Even with all the numbers, is there still those examples where I think coaches look at it and say, hey, I'm just riding my guy?
When somebody's your starting goalie, they should still be able to play 60 games. That's the way I look at it. I still probably have a bit of that old school mentality. But you've seen guys in the league that have thrived in that scenario over the years. And the wear and tear on the bodies really hasn't been that different. But what they are doing is starting to limit the workload. That's the key word here, right? That's what everybody seems to be using. Guys aren't practicing as much. Bobrovsky, Fleury, teams are now having the sense to realize these guys don't need to practice every day and get killed out there. Practice is way harder than games. So they're allowing them to have some time off, and that's given them a new freshness going into games. I still believe that you're number one. If you have a cut number one, there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to play 60 games. When it's 75, like Grant Fuhr used to rattle off back in the day, that's a little bit unrealistic, I think. But I do think that right now this tandem thing is just a hot-button topic more than anything, but there is some validity to it for sure. Both approaches work. Just depends on your team and the chemistry of it.
So Marc-Andre doesn't practice anymore, and I guess part of the reason that they hired you is you get to go in and get killed on the practice goalie, days.
Right? Well, if that's the case, I didn't see a bump in pay grade for it. I only negotiated a free lunch on those days. But
was that kind of a surprise?
In all honesty, though, I've practiced a few times with the team to give a little relief, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun for me. It's a great way for me to stay current with the game, and it gives me a little insight into the Golden Knights players, how they approach the game, how they shoot the puck, all that fun stuff. But yeah, there's definitely value to having an extra guy kicking around that can, one, can still challenge the players, but two, yes, can give your A-game guy a little bit of a break when needed.
Have you been able to do that? Have you been able to take what you learn, just getting shot on by some of the Vegas Golden Knights players and incorporated into the broadcast?
Well, Max Pacioretty has made me look like Swiss cheese every time I've been on the ice. So that's definitely gone in the broadcast. Yeah, you absolutely can. There's little nuances into the way people shoot the puck that is really useful stuff when you get to the broadcast, because you're trying to bring unique content. You're trying to educate listeners to things that are viewers to what they may not be able to pick up on themselves. And those are great examples. Everybody can see that somebody scored a goal. Everybody can see that a guy made a hit, but they may not be able to see why they scored that goal or why his shot is so difficult to stop. So that kind of, I think, gives us a little bit of a leg up being able to do that.
One of the guys who's been a surprise in Vegas has been Cody Glass. Do you have a scouting report on him?
He didn't surprise me. I remember the first day of camp, I looked at him and I looked at his stat line. I saw his draft status, and I saw how he was playing. I said, this kid's going to make the team out of camp. And it raised a few eyebrows around, but you got a kid who went 6th overall, I believe. He was Vegas' first pick. He's done nothing but dominate the Western Hockey League. He's been fantastic there. The biggest thing to me was that he came out last season and played in the playoffs for the Chicago Wolves and led the team in scoring as a rookie who'd never played pro hockey before. That said a lot to me about how he'd be able to make the jump to at least professional. And then you put him on the power play, and it's like he's got a sixth sense out there. He's making passes backside that it doesn't even look like he has any clue that the person's there. And he's able to put them right on the tape. He doesn't throw pucks away. Very good playmaker. I know that the Golden Knights would like to see him shoot the puck more often, but that'll come. He's done a nice job. He's a natural centerman. He's been playing on the wing a little bit because there's so much depth with Vegas right now at center. But he's shown that he's capable to do that, and he's really at home on the power play.
Mike, different situation, obviously, with because Vegas isn't really struggling, but you played in the AHL for a number of teams, and I'm curious, I wanted to get your perspective on this. You've got teams like the Rangers and the Red Wings, who earlier in this season have kept players, talented players, who everybody was expecting to make the jump in the American Hockey League. The Rangers just called up Filip Hedl because Mika Zibanejad got hurt, and Ryan Lindgren is up too, but they've played in Hartford. You got Zadina, Sider, Rasmussen playing in Grand Rapids instead of in Detroit. These are two teams that are rebuilding and struggling. What's the benefit for these young players of playing in the American Hockey League on teams that might be playing well versus coming up and playing in the National Hockey League on teams that are struggling?
Gives them a chance to get their foothold in pro hockey in a situation that's got less pressure than the NHL. You see what happens at the NHL where a kid will come in and it doesn't go well, or maybe he catches lightning in a bottle for a couple games, but it's hard to sustain that for a full season, especially on a team that's not very good. I can think of several examples in the league. Maybe players just come into, Ottawa, for example. You come in and you're right on the bubble and you make the team, and things are going well, and then 2 years later you're out of the league because you weren't able to sustain it sometimes, you know, and that's a tough scenario to be in. So for somebody who hasn't come into camp, who hasn't lit the world on fire but done a nice job, you'd like to see them go down and dominate the American League so they can carry some confidence back to the NHL when they get there. That's kind of what I think that, you know, Grand Rapids has been a really good model of that. Tyler Bertuzzi, Tomas Noshek, who's in Vegas now, and amongst other guys, they dominated the American League. Nyquist, Tatar, quite a few of them. They were very good there, and they were able to carry it when they finally got to the NHL. They may have been a bit overripe. But, you know, a team like Hartford, though, is interesting because they've been awful for the last, like, 4 years.
Yeah, but, so, and now they're good all of a sudden.
You know, you hope they're doing a little better this year, but, yeah. Man, they've been, quite frankly, just terrible for the last couple of years. And that's kind of a no-win situation when it goes like that. I think they've traded their captain the last three seasons, which is just odd. But that's really why. I think you let the kids go down there and dominate, and then they can hopefully carry the confidence to the National League.
Getting back to the Golden Knights, and I wanted to circle back to you talking about being on the ice a little bit. Who's the guy when he takes a shot that you're like, oh, please don't hit me?
So we're looking for the hazard in practice. That's what we're thinking about.
Well, just the big heavy shot that's going to do some damage.
Right, right. Well, like I said before, Pacioretty can fire it, but he's deadly accurate. So I'm not terribly worried about him in practice. What's funny is that Jonathan Marchessault and I were teammates in three cities, and I know he's a weapon out there. And I've always got my guard up a little bit because he loves to bring it high, and we love to compete against each other. It's still there. But I know that maybe one out of every five or six might be coming at my ears. He's got a big hook on his stick, flexible. He loves to shoot it high, and every now and then it gets up. But Marshy always gets a free pass because he's got such a good attitude about it, and he's never somebody who doesn't come up and apologize, and we have a laugh about it. So he gets a forever free pass. And also, too, I can't freak out too much because I'm just the fill-in guy at this point. It's not my career anymore.
So no chops to the ankles there?
No. You can't do that now. That's not cool, you know? I mean, I got to go out there and
imagine the fill-in goalie
nice
chopping
guy
a guy's ankle.
Eating pucks and happy to do it.
Imagine the fill-in goalie chopping a guy's ankle. How would Gallant feel about that?
Yeah, I think that'd be a one-way ticket out of Dodge, not just on the ice. So I definitely have to stay in my lane, know my role. But it's still fun. I still get to go out and compete and battle and still have some laughs, especially with the number of ex-teammates I have on the Golden Knights that, you know, I'm still familiar with and friends with, even though I'm still calling the games. You know, it's a pretty cool relationship.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of your other projects. You certainly stay busy. When you played, you were busy, and now that you're quasi-retired, you've kept yourself busy. You worked for us for a little bit last year during the playoffs, analyzing some goaltending and some games, and I thought it was fantastic. You do the live game look-ins with the McKenna in-game Twitter handle where you kind of break down what's happening with the goalies, and every time I follow it along, I always learn something.
Absolutely.
where I want to say, oh, that goalie's horrible and you convince me otherwise, or that goalie's great and you convince me otherwise. And then you have your own podcast, The 6 Degrees of Mike McKenna, which fantastic name because of the way that you can trace almost every goaltender or every player, trainer, whatever you've had on, you've had some point in the countless stops that you've had across North America playing hockey. Clearly you have a lot of interest and just, you know, how did the podcast come along and you know, what's the future for that?
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks so much for allowing me to write for NHL.com last year. It was a ton of fun to do and something that I think really helped my career in a lot of ways too. Stemmed from McKenna in game. That's the Twitter handle I still use occasionally. And I use it a lot when I'm not on the broadcast with the Golden Knights. So I'm not doing every game. I'm doing most of them this year. But the games that I'm not actually working with the team, a lot of times I'll be doing the in-game account. And the podcast, it started off as a passion play. I've got to thank Sean Shapiro, who's in Dallas. He writes for The Athletic, for coming up with the name. That was really cool of him to figure that one out. He had a cool article about it. But the podcast has been so much fun, talking to people who were I've been friends with that I know, but also people I've been that have been heroes to me, people I really looked up to, Glenn Hall, Mano Rayom, other people from different generations, and hardly anybody said no. So It's still going strong. I just had Jamie McLennan last week, part one. Part two is going to come out this week. One of the funniest guys I ever had. And previous week was Michael Layton, who just recently retired. One of the all-time greatest American League goalies, and also had over 100 games in the NHL. So, been really lucky. That's going to keep going. And then I'm just being a broadcaster, talking about hockey on the air for the Golden Knights.
How'd you limit Jamie McLennan to just two parts?
Well, that was why it happened. We sat down for an hour and 45 minutes, and the goal was an hour, and it felt like we were cutting it short. So, I mean, that's the fun of this, though. When Michael Layton and I talked, we're going to go for an hour, and then at the end I started to do the outro, and he goes, "Wait, that's it? We're done?" I'm like, "Well, we can keep going if you want." So, it's always easy to talk shop with other guys that have been in your shoes.
Yeah, well,
and it's a lot of fun.
We can keep going here too, Mike, but we do have to cut it now. So I appreciate it. Sean, appreciate it. This is great. This is the great hockey conversation that we're looking for on this podcast. So thank you very much.
More than welcome. Anytime, guys. Happy to come on.
Follow Mike on Twitter at MikeMcKenna56. Certainly follow McKenna in game on Twitter. It's a fascinating follow, Sean, when he is analyzing. If you're watching the game that he is breaking down, you will absolutely learn something. And of course, listen to his podcast. One of the things we talked about was, and I asked him about it, the American Hockey League, that debate, do you want to be in the AHL? Should guys be in the AHL or the NHL? I didn't bring it up because Kaapo Kakko, the number two pick in the draft, he's not in the AHL. He's not in Hartford. He's with the New York Rangers, but he's drowning. He's struggling with the New York Rangers right now. I spoke to Mark Stahl about him, asked about what he's seen, and Mark said Kakko's a player with a ton of confidence, but he's frustrated because he's not doing the things that he is used to doing right now. And you have David Quinn trying to figure out how to coach this guy with the New York Rangers. And it's a struggle because he comes in and with so much hype, and he's based his entire career off of being the best player on his team and the statistics involved. He's not generating the statistics. And right now it doesn't look like he's doing enough away from the puck to become more of a factor in games either.
Yeah, and remember when the argument happened, when it was Hughes versus Kakko, the main argument in Kakko's case was that he's played against men for several years in Finland and he would be more NHL ready. You know, Jack Hughes has struggled, but I don't know to this degree, right? He's had some tough games. But to me, it just seems like it's so hard to take that one or two guy and say, you know what, he's not ready, I'm going to send him to the minors. But let me tell you a little story from a couple of years ago. We talked about it earlier. Mikko Rantanen came into the league, played seven games his first year, didn't put up a point. They sent him down to San Antonio, right? He was a number 10 pick, a little bit of a different story, but they sent him down to San Antonio, dominated the league, came back up, did okay. He was still a really bad defensive player. Third year, comes up, sticks, 25 goals. All of a sudden, he's a plus player. He's not a minus player anymore. He figured it out with San Antonio, right? And it wasn't as hard a decision for them, but I think Colorado, same boat as the Rangers back then. They were loading up on players. They were trying to rebuild. They were trying to figure out what their identity was going to be and what they were going to do, and they could wait for Rantanen. I think the Rangers can wait for Kakko.
They can absolutely wait for Kakko.
Mike said it, these guys come into the league, they can't figure it out. 2 years later, they're out of the league because of the struggles that they have. And mentally, it just wears on you. Every other day, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. Mentally, that is the hardest thing in the world. And eventually, it becomes so chronic that you can't get your confidence back.
Yeah, and this guy's really hard on himself, too. He's got a ton of confidence, but he is no doubt his toughest critic. There's
all
no
the great
question
ones.
About it. Yeah,
all the great ones are.
Absolutely. In fact, I asked David Quinn if Kakko needs to watch a game from the press box just as a scratch, if that's been a thought. And he said, it is with all young players. So sending him down to Hartford is obviously another step beyond that. But I think all things have to be on the table with this one because he's so vitally important to the future of this franchise. And let's not forget, they are still rebuilding. Yes, they got Panarin. Yes, they got Trouba. They are rebuilding. And if there was never more evident of how far away they are than on Sunday night when they played the Boston Bruins, and the Bruins could just, especially the top line, could do whatever they wanted. They were all over the ice. The Rangers had no answer for them. Part of that is a lack of battle level, though, that David Quinn has harped on his team about and has been very critical of them about, and how you might not have as much skill or you might not be deep and you can be young and all that, but it should not affect how hard you play. And I think that's what's going to be very interesting over the next several weeks here for the New York Rangers and a couple other young teams, is how hard they play. As I said at the top of this talk about the Rangers, a lot of guys who have measured themselves on stats, and David Quinn has brought this up, now have to measure themselves a little bit on will too.
Yeah, when you're in that situation, you're not going to generate the stats because you don't have the players to help you generate those stats. The Bruins are a perfect example, right? Like, you look at the difference. Their young players come up, and they're allowed to find their way. They're allowed, you know, you look at a Charlie Coyle, you look at on the back end with a Krug or whoever it might be. A Connor Clifton is a perfect example. They're allowed. They were allowed to find their way because they had guys in front of them that could carry a huge load. Who's going to carry that load in front of Kapo? Like, I don't know who it is right now. So he's got to do it, and if he doesn't, they fail. Well, not only does he fail, they fail. And the great ones, the ones that are going to be at the top of any draft class, they want to succeed, and when they don't, it's mentally debilitating.
Absolutely. Let's look at some things that are happening this week. Two things in particular. Ryan Getzlaf, he's approaching 1,000 games. Is this guy still underappreciated in the National Hockey League?
Of course. West Coast bias, right? Yeah, he plays out west. Nobody pays attention to him. Look, he's part of that. The most unbelievable draft class probably in the history of the NHL, that 2003 draft class. He's going to be the third or fourth guy to play in 1,000 games when he does it on Sunday. Face of the franchise. Better than a point-per-game player in the playoffs. Redefined who the Anaheim Ducks are. I can't say enough good things about this guy, and I do think he's underrated, and I do think a lot of people on the East Coast haven't seen him play consistently. Yep. And seen he's the prototypical power center. That's who he is.
I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think there's a question about it. I think Ryan Getzlaf is a Hall of Famer. And I know that's you throw that out about different guys and like, oh, are they that? I think Ryan Getzlaf is. He's got the cup. He's got the golds. He's got the stats. He's got the games played all with one team. There's something special about this guy, how big he is, how physical he is. Could you imagine trying to play against Ryan Getzlaf?
No, and you know what? We'll go back to the very beginning of the show. He's a good Saskatchewan boy, too.
There you go. One other thing happening this week, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins against Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers Saturday night. Let's debate it. I'm going to go first because I'm not going to give you the chance, right? If you had to pick one guy of these two, I am still picking Sidney Crosby. Right now, I still think he is the best player in the league. I think Connor McDavid is the fastest player in the league, probably the best in the league with the puck on his stick, maybe the most skilled in the league. But if I got to pick one guy, a center, to be my number one center to win a game, it's still Sidney Crosby. Nobody in the league makes players around him better than Sidney Crosby.
Now, wait a minute. Did you say if you're starting a team or you need to win one game?
I'm picking Sidney Crosby regardless.
Okay. If you're starting a team,
well, you're starting
I'm
a team,
Connor
you're picking
McDavid.
Connor McDavid. Fine.
He's right. Much younger, right? And I've been on the Sidney Crosby bandwagon since day one, and I'll pick him in almost any argument. But I think in today's game, not that Crosby's slow at all, but I think in today's game, I'm going with the Edmonton guy just because of the way that he's able to drive the game. Look, the thing that amazes me is he's the one guy, when he gets into open ice, where you will see defensemen turn and give their back to him because they know they can't keep up with him skating backwards, so they have to skate forwards to get ahead of him to turn around backwards to try and break him up. There's nobody in the league that possesses that kind of speed, nope. And he's going to drive the offense that you need to win in the game today.
But back to, I guess, to win one game, I'm still taking Sidney Crosby. Okay. Are you? Are you still taking McDavid to win one game?
I'll take McDavid to make it an even fight.
All right.
You can't go wrong either way, right? For one game, Crosby has the track record, but it's McDavid's time now, I think.
Well, that'll be an interesting watch, no doubt. And that'll do it for us this week on the podcast. We obviously thank Darren Pang for joining us and Mike McKenna. Sean, it's great to have you in the seat again. I don't think you'll be here next week, though.
I will not be here next week.
Okay. Are we sure about this?
I will be, God willing, I will be in Stockholm.
All right.
For the big Global Series game between the Lightning and the Sabres. Should be a great time.
Stockholm's always a great time. Pelican, Akarat, Sean, you know the places to go. And be sure to listen to the other podcasts on the NHL Podcast Network. We've got a new one debuting Wednesday, Puck Culture with Jackie Redmond and friends from the NHL Network. And you still have Executive Suite with Deb Placey, Fantasy on Ice with Pete Jensen and Rob Reese, and Draft Class with Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial. And until next week, enjoy the games.